This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, I'm Rekha Sharma, and I played Landry on Star Trek Discovery. You are listening to The Edge on Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to Star Trek Discovery. I'm your host, Patrick Devlin, and joining me, as always, is the amazing Amy Nelson. Amy, how are you?
Hello there. I'm doing great. It's a little bit of cold weather here in Vegas. It feels... I don't like it. It's cold.
What do you consider cold?
Well, it got down to low 60s. I know! Freezing.
It was 38 here today.
It's no fair. I can't complain to anyone when it gets cold.
Not when you live in Vegas and you're complaining about cold.
We did actually have rain. Now that's winter has definitely come. Yeah.
It's more impressive than the cold. it got pretty cold here today, but it actually warmed up to like, I don't know. I took my jacket off at like 54. I was walking around in a t-shirt, so.
Oh my gosh. No, I was inside my classroom with a sweater and a tank top underneath because I had to have layers and my boots and my warm socks and a jacket because it got cold. I know.
In the low 60s?
But I was inside too.
But even in the low 60s, I'd be outside in shorts. Wow. Tale of two weathers. Okay. So moving on, because they're not here for weather reports around the country. So what we're here to talk about is Ask Not, the latest short trek. What were your initial thoughts about this?
And boy, wasn't it short. Did you
get
it?
Okay, yeah. So before we get into initial thoughts, one, it was really short, which... I don't think helped it, actually.
7 minutes and 44.
Yeah, I think it could have been better if they actually expanded on a little bit of it. But
because the other short treks were,
10 to 15, right?
Yep, yeah.
So, but hearing the name, did you get what you thought you were going to get from the name of the episode? Like, did you know the name before you watched it?
Well, I assume that it had reference to ask not what you can do, or ask not what your country can do for you, but what
you can
do for your country.
And it had nothing to do with that, by the way. Nothing really. No, it didn't.
Yes, what it did. No, it didn't. Are serving.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
That speech is talking to citizens. This is talking to a military. It's totally different. Totally different. I've been on both sides of this, civilian and non-civilian life, and of course a soldier is asking not what its country can do for it. That's the reason why it joined. So to use that was very weird to me. We were already past the ask not phase of this if you're in Starfleet.
Yeah, I can see that. I didn't even think of it. To me, it worked because I was like, oh yeah, wait, she's, you know, proving what she can do and for... Yeah. Yeah.
Right, but she did that already.
To me, it worked.
Like, when she joined, that's what she did that. But we're past that now. Now it's trying to find out what ship you're going to serve on, right? Which we find out at the end. That's what this was all about.
Right. Yeah.
But this wasn't like her initiation to get into Starfleet.
Right.
Which is where you swear allegiance to your government if you're going into the U.S. military. But, and actually, you don't even do that. That's a lie. You swear allegiance to the Constitution. but that's anyway.
Yeah.
And when you join the military here, you actually don't swear. You swear allegiance to the President of the United States and the Constitution of the United States, not actually technically the country.
Commander-in-chief, isn't it?
Yes, but that is the president.
Right.
And but you're not swearing allegiance to, I know they seem similar, but you're not swearing allegiance to the country. You're swearing allegiance to uphold the office of the Commander-in-Chief and to uphold the Constitution, which is slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Huh. It almost makes room for justification of the army going against.
No, it completely and utterly is supposed to make room for the army going against the president.
Right. Interesting.
The whole point, going back to when the country was founded, the whole point of the state militias, which is now the National Guard, but the whole point of them was to maintain states' rights, which states' rights are the people's rights, over the federal government. It was supposed to minimize the federal government's power over the states. So if you uphold the Constitution, which is the binding document that holds the states together in their sovereignty, you're actually not beholden to the federal government per se.
Hmm. Right.
So anyway, which is not the ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. That's a whole other issue, but.
Yeah, you're right, because that is directed towards citizens and.
Yeah, and doing what they can do for the government, I mean, and the country itself. Mm-hmm. But so, no, I didn't see it that way at all. I guess I could see where you saw it that way, but I didn't see it that way at all.
So when you heard Ask Not,
I had no idea what we were getting.
Oh, not a clue. Okay.
I thought it was going to have something to do with that speech, you know, or some. Yeah.
Variation.
Of, yes. Somehow referencing that speech without saying it. But I couldn't. I just didn't think I was getting this.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think I was getting a test of someone. Or a mutiny, possibly, if you didn't get to the end of it yet.
Yeah. Can we talk about that word mutiny?
We can. Can we do that after initial thoughts?
Yes.
Okay. What was your initial thoughts?
Oh, because I didn't share them.
No, we just went into what you thought of the name.
Yeah, so I watched this quite a few times. Thankfully, it didn't take me so long because it was so short.
You can watch it twice in the same time as the others.
So, and I watched it on different days, and each time I was like, okay. And it was funny because I texted you, Pat, and I was like, I don't know if I have any like guttural reaction. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. It was there. It was a lovely short story. Like it had a beautiful beginning, middle, and end. There was some suspense. I had no idea it was a test. So I was just in it for the ride, hook, line, sinker. And then all of a sudden he's like taking off his handcuffs. And I'm like, what's going on? Like I was totally their target audience and I just fell right into it. So I liked, it was fine for me.
I would start the same way you started that explanation and stop it. It was just there. I wouldn't use lovely. I wouldn't use the word beautiful. It didn't fool me. I knew it was Pike. I knew it was a test.
Well, we all knew it was Pike because
I knew it was a test.
Okay.
It was there. I mean, it wasn't terrible. It was acted well, I guess. I mean, it was so obvious that's not Pike. So it wasn't some clone. It's not his demeanor at all. So it couldn't have possibly been real. And once he brought up that her and her husband were the only ones to survive the Tholians, let's do that again. You were like, oh, this is fake.
I wrote that down in my notes. I was like, sole survivor, ? Really? We're going there? Really?
Yep. So, once he said that, I was like, this is a test. This is obviously. First off, when you mutiny, you typically mutiny against the captain of a starship, and he's the captain. So, you'd be mutinying against him.
And he.
Not him creating the mutiny. Then it would be treason.
Oh. Man, you're all going civics on us today.
Well, remember, I was the guy that wanted to do sociology, so.
Huh, I didn't even think about that.
He could have been mutinying against the Starbase, but that doesn't really fit.
Well, that's the storyline.
I know, but it doesn't really fit. It'd still be treason, because if you're going against the Starbase, it's really going against the country, or the government, or the military. It would be more treason than mutiny.
Yeah, he was going against the Starbase, the admiral there.
Right, and that would be more treason than it would be mutiny. Mm-hmm.
So we're talking mutiny. Can I bring it up now?
Yeah. So this is where I was going to, because I wanted to point out that word also threw it off for me.
Yeah, it threw it off to me. And I'm not sure if it was because of all of the fans. And we've talked about this before on The Edge on how watching Discovery in the era of social media, has it ruined or has it increased or heightened the experience? And I think in this case, when I heard the word mutiny, all I could think of was season one of Discovery. Mutineer, we've never heard of a mutineer. And then all the fans and their comments are going through the back of my mind. What is this? There's never been a mutineer. And I was just like, okay, we're hearing that word again. And how are the fans going to respond? It was a trigger word for me, actually, Pat, because I got tense hearing, oh my gosh, we're going to have another mutineer.
Yeah, but you got tense for all the wrong reasons.
Well, I know. That's why I'm saying, because of watching this in the social media age, it's in this example has not been good for me.
Yeah, no, I would say no, the social media era is not helping you watch the show, because they didn't want you to have that. They might have wanted you to have that reaction, but you had it for all the wrong reasons. You had it because you were worried about what you were going to have to read on Facebook, not because it bothers you. Yeah, use the word mutineer.
Mm-hmm.
I made it pretty clear. I don't care about what the fans say anymore last episode. So I didn't think of them at all.
Well, and just like that guttural response of, oh, there's a mutineer, 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 and that how many times it was spoken about and talked about on mic and, you know, everywhere, that it's like, it just was a trigger word for me. And I just was like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? Is everyone going to freak out that we have another mutineer? And, you know, that didn't fit in with the TOS timeline and da da da. So. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't care that people were bothered by it when it first happened. It turns out that there's not a mutineer this time, but even if there was, I wouldn't have cared either.
Yeah.
I guess there could be an argument made that maybe I would care because it's Pike. And we've heard a lot about Pike and not heard the word mutineer.
Right.
But all for nothing, because it turns out he wasn't a mutineer.
Nope.
So it didn't really matter. But, yeah, no, I didn't even think about that. Like, what the fan reaction would be to another mutineer. I didn't. Nope. No. As soon as he started acting the way he was acting, it was so obvious that it wasn't him. We just had a short trek a little while ago that pointed out that he wants to use force as the absolute last resort and finds it a failure. And here he is running in the room wanting to go guns blazing.
Yeah.
Not likely.
Yeah, now that I think about it, his personality and character was completely different.
Oh, yeah. And as he took off the handcuffs, he changed back into Pike.
Yep.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Now, in this short, we know that the viewer, however, the woman that he's doing this to, would not have known what his personality was.
Exactly.
So it could fool her, but it wasn't fooling me, is my point.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, it fooled me.
No, that's fine. I mean, you probably enjoyed it more because of that. Because yeah. Since I was just waiting for them to tell us it wasn't real.
Uh-huh.
My only thing was I couldn't figure out how they were going to come up with how it wasn't real.
Hmm.
Because there are no holodecks, right? So they just have a test room.
Yeah.
Well, people complained a lot. I saw people complaining about, well, how could they have the room blow up? It's a test room, guys. Like, it's not that complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. It's not a holodeck. So they just blow up a room every time they want to test somebody.
Well, and they had that, like, Oh, well, this is actually before, but I mean, the Kobayashi Maru, there was a test room.
Yeah, but they kind of knew they were in a test room, right?
Yeah. No, I know that they knew, but I'm just saying.
Right. But yeah, exactly. They send her to go not a holodeck, do something, whatever. Yeah. You go there, and the only thing is, that's a really rough test because you could really die. They're blowing up stuff right behind your head.
Yeah.
Like, that was a pretty severe explosion.
Right at the beginning, yeah, you know how severe it is because they have the ringing in your ears sound, and I hate that when
and TV it also does so that. Do I. It also looks like she gets knocked over, like she's not diving out of the way of the explosion. The concussion of the explosion pushes her over.
Yeah,
so it's not the safest test, but firemen do this all the time. They have brick buildings in Long Island where the fire departments go to train one weekend every 5 months or 4 months or whatever it is, where it's a concrete building, and they stuff wood and hay and whatever, and they set it ablaze, and then you put it out. And guess what? Next weekend, some other firehouse is going to go do the same thing. Hmm. So it's not like this is a new concept.
Right, right.
She just didn't know she was going into a test. She thought she was going to do some duty.
Yeah, maybe the turbo lift, you know, she thought she was going to, you know, a communications room, and the turbo lift took her to the test room, and how would you know?
Exactly.
So the listeners will appreciate my complaint here, just real minor, the spinning. She gets blown over, she's upside down, the camera's upside down, and it wasn't as bad, I have to say, as season one or season two, but still, when she got knocked out that first time on the ground, and we see the camera come up, and she's upside down, that annoyed the crap out of me. I'm like, really? Why are we still spinning? And that's all I'm going to say about that.
Wow. So we jumped to topic three here, but okay.
No, I just was.
But see, spinning, spinning didn't really bother me too much in the first two seasons.
I know.
However,
it's a total Amy thing.
I know. It didn't really it really didn't bother me here because the whole point is to disorientate you so you feel like you're her. So
yeah. And it wasn't spinning. It was, and I watched it a couple times. Yeah. It was upside down and then it was right side up. And then when we were spinning, it's only because she was rolling herself over on her stomach. And so that it was natural. And so I did, but still the spinning. I just thought I'd bring it up for you listeners.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be an episode without you complaining about spinning. So, all right. So you want to go into the types of coercion he used?
Yeah, because I was thinking about this, and for it to be a test, like, and again, I watched this multiple times, and I was like, man, he is laying it thick. He's trying everything to get her to break, all right? And so the very first thing he does is he gives the command, get me to communications. I need to see what's going on. So just ignore the handcuffs. And he's basically testing, is his status alone, even though he's, you know, to her, there's no rank, is his status alone going to break her? Obviously not. Then he goes into citing regulation. Well, and that doesn't work. Then.
Well, hold on. Yes? I think you missed a step.
Okay.
In the very first, it's not just status alone. You're right. You're not incorrect. I think, however, part of it too is he walks very calmly over across the room.
Yeah, his status and demeanor.
Right.
And his command and presence.
Correct. And I think part of that is, does she buy that the guy just said it's mutiny. We don't need to tell that he turned, right? Well, the mutiny could be that they took him out. So does she even buy that she's working for the good guy at the moment?
Oh.
That's number one. She has to decide, is Pike a captive because he's a mutineer, or is he a captive because they're mutinying? See, I know it's not really... It's a slight difference there because he does say no one needs to know that he turned.
Yeah.
But they weren't really convincing in the statement.
No.
That he was the bad guy. You know what I mean? So it wasn't, well, this is the leader of the mutineers. That, okay, well, now we know whose side you're on. Although you still could be lying through your teeth if you took him captive.
Yeah.
You could have put that thing on his face because you didn't want people to see that you captured him.
Right.
That you're taking over the ship. So that, to me, that was the first step, getting past that. Then, well, then everything you've said since then. Yeah. So.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So she had to make a decision on who to believe.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So then he starts talking about, oh, well, your husband's on the Bowman, and just sort of appealing, like, you need to protect your husband and protect your family and, you know, going the family route, which a lot of people would break at protecting their family.
Of course they would.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he laid it on so overly thick.
Yes.
And the way he laid it on. Oh, is that the Bowman? Oh, that's right. Your husband's there.
Yes.
Oh, wait a second. You just happen to know some random cadet that's going to take you captive in an hour. If their husband happens to be on the other ship, he got there a week ago. That's amazing, man. Oh, you just happen to know that they are sole survivors of a Tholian attack, and you happen to be walking into a Tholian trap. Wow, that coincidence is amazing.
Well, and she does know that, you know, that the Tholians wanted the Enterprise and stuff like that. So I thought okay. That was impressive. But
yeah, but
it doesn't, neither here nor there. I know.
It's just so over the top. I'm sorry. I know Pike, everyone loves him and he's great and he's the greatest ever. I get it. However, these are nobodies we're talking about.
Yeah.
Her and her husband are absolute nobodies. Their death, unfortunately, wouldn't make a bit of difference in Pike's life. There's no reason for him to know that her husband's on the Bowman if this is real.
Oh, right. If this were real.
Yeah. Right. There's no reason for that. Obviously, yeah. He knows it because he needs to go in there with something.
Right.
To try and force on her.
Yes. So, yeah, he has obviously armed with that information to try and get, again, to break her. And so when she, again, makes the decision, nope, my husband knew what he signed up for. I knew what I signed up for. He's also then creating this loophole, you know, sort of by regulation. Well, you can reinstate me because you're an officer and blah, blah, blah. And nope. And she turns him down again with this loophole. And then I think the greatest, when there have been many movies about vengeance, the Tholians deserve it. And you can get your vengeance on there. And I mean, think about all the different types of coercion to try and break her, to try and get, have her go against what she is supposed to be doing as a Starfleet officer. That's a lot of coercion, really, seriously.
It's a ton, and it's all within 5 minutes. So it's laid on heavy and quick. Also, the last thing he does is he just tries to walk out.
Yeah.
Because that's also another loophole. Well, I didn't let him go free, but I really didn't stop him either, you know? So my conscience is clear. Whatever he did after he got out of this room is on him.
Yeah.
And that's when he realized she was going to shoot him.
Yeah.
But yeah, he laid on a ton. And I guess that's where I feel like they could have expanded and spaced these out a little bit, where there was some lulls maybe, that this story could have been better for me. Because laying it on so fast, so heavy, and not just extending this to 10 minutes and letting some lulls where he's thinking or he's trying to come up with a plan, like, it made it too obvious to me and it made it too fast to me.
You know, I think you're right. When you said that, Q&A came to my mind and how there was really good pacing with the Spock and Number One. It's like, okay, they're in the turbo lift. Okay, we're going to get out. Oh, well, let's, you know, answer some questions. Oh, we're going to get out. Oh, we got, you know, that seemed to have breathing room in it.
Right. And they use the questions in Q&A as almost like the down slopes. Because the questions and answers themselves actually weren't that important to catch.
Exactly.
What was happening between the questions that mattered.
Exactly.
Where this, if we would have just paid attention to the questions and answers, it would have been, that's what, we'd have this. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'd have this show. And it was just okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and one thing that I remember you talking about, like, if you tell me that you care about canon, then you don't really care about canon because you're telling me that you do. And I should be able to just
You mean the writers, yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to know if you thought the same thing about this episode, because it felt like there was this huge test, and I heard again on social media that it's like, this is unfair, and why would they do this? And, you know, this wouldn't even work. And then we have Captain Pike saying, I know this seems extreme and inhuman, but war is both. So the fact that Captain Pike is saying that, does that negate the whole testing process and the theory and the philosophy of doing tests on humans like this?
I guess it could. I didn't think that at the time, because what we know of Pike would lead me to believe he actually wouldn't like this test. However, what we know of Pike would lead me to believe he would still do this test. Mm. Because that's what Starfleet commands. And they were just in a major war with the Klingons. So that's important. But yeah, kind of. You're kind of hedging your bets on Pike there. Like, now they basically say, and what they really made him say it for is so that we can't just go, see, he really is a jerk. Like, that's what it really is for. Like, so that if you don't like Pike or you don't want to like Pike, you can't point to the people who are like, he's perfect. And you can be like, he ain't perfect anymore. You see what he put her through? But now he did that, but he said, I get it. It's not right. I don't like doing it, but.
Yeah.
War right. sucks, and you have to be able to, and war does suck, and it is inhumane, and there are things that happen in our basic training for all our branches that are unfair and not fun, but, mm-hmm. you know, and is that excusable? I guess.
So one thing that I thought was really good and very characteristic of our perfect Pike was when it was over, like, the first thing he did was, like, your husband's okay. Don't worry. This is just a simulation. Like, he calms her in, I think, what he believes to be her most heightened and stressful point of family. And that's the first thing he addresses. Don't worry. Your husband's fine. He's not under attack. In fact, we're bringing him over, right? So it's like this perfect Pike characteristic of, okay, I'm going to address your greatest fear. And then we can, you know, so once we get over that, then we can get to the fact that, hey, you passed the test and hey, we're going to, you know, get you onto the Enterprise.
Right. No, I, and that's absolutely what Pike would do. And Pike would, yep. again, that what they've told us of Pike, that would lead me to believe that that's not common practice to make sure that whatever they used against them is going to be there. And to, because not everyone's married, so obviously you can't use the same tricks against every person you test right. this way. However, this test is specific to the Enterprise as well. So there goes that whole, this is what Starfleet demands of me excuse. Because mm-hmm. this is number one's test. Spock says it. Like, we've learned not to get, that you don't get any mercy from number one.
Yeah.
So this is, Pike has to approve this.
So what did you think learning that it was number one's idea to decline her acceptance to the Enterprise, to put her through this test? Like, that's a pretty rough test to be passing.
Yes, but this goes back to the, we want to stay within canon, people watch. That's what it does. Spock came up with the Kobayashi Maru. Number one comes up with this test. They're both horrible, horrible tests. One, you can't win unless you cheat. And the other one, you win if you shoot the captain. Neither one is a good outcome.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think when I first heard that, I mean, because I have been rejected myself. Like, I applied to a couple of colleges and, oh my gosh, I was rejected. And what you do after rejection, like, tells you who you are about yourself and your character. And it's a growing moment, right? You either roll with the punches or, you know, your life is ruined. And so here, her and her husband are making the application to the Enterprise and they get rejected. Like, that in and of itself is a great test. And can we just have it be that? But then to go through all these other coercions, because, you know, she obviously passed that. She was rejected. She was sent to this ship. No, the base. What's it called? Yeah.
I don't remember what star
base. The star base.
Said which one, but I don't know which one.
Yeah. She was sent to the star base and is doing her duty, you know, without, from what we can tell, you know, no bitterness or anything, you know, and obviously she still respects the Federation and Starfleet and what it stands for, because she's not giving in. She's not crumbling under this pressure.
Yeah, I would agree, except if you're going to go through all that, then that just being the end game wouldn't be enough. It just wouldn't be enough of a test. Mm. You couldn't just come back a week later and go, haha, fooled you. You're in. So you have to have some other test after that. Mm. And this is the crazy test that number one comes up with. But again, I think it fits number one, because number one was supposed to be Spock, right? Or Spock was really supposed to be number one. And when whatever the network exec said, no women on the bridge in prominent roles, they just transferred most of that character attitude over to Spock. So now we've seen they're trying to put more of that on number one. That's why they had Spock and number one in the turbo lift and her talking about, well, you can't show, you know, this. And she starts singing because she's always the other way in front of everyone else. So I don't know. The test is rough, but I guess if you want to be on the flagship, it should be rough. I think it's weirder that every ship has its own test. Should be a standard test, and the highest scorers that the captain wants goes to the or the admirals want, whatever someone would pick, but to have individualized test. I got a question though, because this was highly debated. Did the husband actually go to the bowman?
Yeah.
Really? Or did he also not get in and he's getting a test somewhere?
Well, I mean, at that moment, she wasn't accepted to the Enterprise, so she's on the Starbase. So her husband wasn't accepted to the Enterprise and is on the Bowman.
But is he really part of the Bowman? Or was that just part of a test for him? Like, they don't really explain anything. Do you think he really didn't get accepted to the Enterprise? Or do you think... I think he really wasn't accepted because you're not accepting both. You're not putting a husband and wife on a starship directly after a war.
Yeah, I didn't think about the husband.
I didn't either, but someone brought it up. So I think he really was rejected, because they said the first part of the test is your rejection. Well, they both got rejected. Now, is he getting a test somewhere too, or is it just her? And I think it's just her. The other person wanted to believe it wasn't, and then cited all the relationships we see in Star Trek, but all those relationships start on the ship or on the space station. They don't start... Typically, they don't start off of that and come onto the ship together.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think about that too much. Okay. Hey, but I did think about the Next Generation.
Okay. How so?
Coming of age, and this is where Wesley's trying to get into the academy and has to go through a test, as do all teenagers who want to get to the academy have to go through this test. Do you remember that episode? Okay.
I mean, I remember the idea of the episode, but I couldn't remember a single thing that happens. The only thing I remember from... the only specific thing I can remember about Wesley is when they did the ridiculous maneuver, got someone killed.
Well, that's when
he's already in.
Oh.
When they do that stupid starburst.
Oh, my gosh.
And then Picard is all upset with him.
That one's good.
It is, but it's the only thing I can remember of any specific instance.
All right. Well, so Wesley and his friends... It's not Mordok, it's the other one, because he gets them confused because they look alike. And the cute little girl, Oleana, and Mordok, yeah, that they are trying to get into the academy, but they have to go through this psych evaluation. And so they each have to go through and they have to face their own fears. And with Wesley's, it's the one where he has to decide, like there's an explosion in engineering and he has to decide who to save. And so the fact that he makes the decision, like that was him passing the test. It didn't really matter who he saved. It was the fact that
so the idea is that he can't freeze.
Yeah. Yeah.
If he froze, he fails.
Right. Yeah. So, so that again, but he knew he was in a simulation. So it's not, you know, quite that related, just the fact that we do see that there are tests in Starfleet. However, I think they're always, the participants know they are being tested. So this is the first time, I think, on screen that we see they don't know they're being tested.
Right, right, which is very different.
It is.
You know, it's extremely different to know you're in a test that things are going terrible in, opposed to not knowing and things are going terrible, you know, like... So I understand, like, the Kobayashi Maru, they don't understand that you can't win, that there is no way to win. Like, that's part of the test is you go in with the idea that you can win, and no matter what you do, you're failing. And they're just trying to see your reactions to the failure.
Right.
So that's the closest to this test you get, because when you went in with the idea of how to pass the test.
Right.
You didn't understand the outcome or what they were looking for, whereas in all the other tests... You understand the stakes involved. Even if he didn't know, he just had to pick somebody. You know what I mean? Like, the fear with him could be, well, there's two people. If I try to save this one, they both die. If I try to save that one, maybe they both... And then he freezes, but he understands that he's there to save somebody. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So I think that's the only difference, is because here that you don't... You just think you're in a regular day and you're being shot at. But, again, the Kobayashi Maru, when you're sitting with that test... The part you're being watched for, you have no idea, is actually the test. You know, so unless you're Picard, unless you're Kirk, apparently you figure it out and you break the system.
And it's a good thing everyone has to go through medical tests that your, you know, blood pressure and heart rate can handle this stressful.
Oh, I've had stress tests before; they're horrible.
Mm.
I had to have one right before my shoulder surgery. And they make you run. The idea is that you have to get your heart pumping harder than it would be when they try and wake you back up. And at the time, I was training for 5Ks.
Oh.
I was still pretty heavy, but I was running a lot.
Uh-huh.
So now I'm on this treadmill, and like it's like intern city. There's like three residents in the room, two really big guys to catch me if I pass out, the doctor, three like 22-year-olds who are just trying to become doctors. It was a nightmare. So you have to lay down. Curl up in like the fetal position. They sonogram your heart to see how it's beating. Then they tell you to get on the treadmill. So I'm running and they look at me and they're like, hey, he's a big guy. This ain't going to take much. And I'm running and then they realize my heart rate's not going up at all. So they up it more. They up it more. Then they put it on incline. Then they put it on incline again. Then they up it more. Now I'm like a full out sprint. Finally, my heart rate hits the number they're looking for, and they're like, now. And when they say now, they mean jump back on the table as fast as you can and get in the fetal position facing away from the guy that's going to test you, because he has to reach over you with the sonogram thing and look at your heart again. Well, the guy missed. He couldn't get my heart in time before it lowered.
Oh.
So I had to get back on the treadmill and do it again.
Oh, my gosh.
And all I wanted to do was die. And they're like... I'm like, I can't. They're like, you have to get on now. I'm like, I'm going to die. They're like, well, that's the point. We're trying to make sure you don't. I'm like, no, literally, I'm going to die. Just fail me. I can't do this twice. You have to give me a 10-minute break. They're like, but then your heart rate goes back down. It's going to take longer to get back up. I go, but I think I'm going to die. And I argued with him long enough that I kind of caught my breath again and then got on the treadmill and started running. And he got it the second time, thankfully. But
oh, my gosh.
It's horrible. It's hard. I never want one again.
Wow. I've never even heard of anyone going through that. Okay.
Well, I have an inverted T wave. So if you get an EKG, you know the sign you always see on TV? Doot,
yeah. Doot.
So there's four of those. And on my fourth one, it's supposed to go up, then down. Up, then down. Up, okay. Then down. And then back to middle. So up, to middle, down to middle, up to middle, down to middle. On the very last boop on the screen, mine goes down and then up.
So huh.
It's backwards. And they're like, we don't know what that is. You got to get the stress test. I've had it my whole life. Are you sure? Yes. Yes, I'm sure. Can you get the doctor's records? No, that guy's dead. I can't.
Wow.
All right, go for a stress test. Oh, yep. It sucks. But here, they're in the middle of this test. They're not even checking that for you. They're just like, well, we think they'll survive because they survived the stress test before.
Yeah.
Yep. Horrible. Horrible people. So do you think it was a live ammo gun?
The question. It sounded like it, you know, it revved itself up. It looked like it was on... It didn't even look like it was on stun, which it should have been. I mean, stun was all she needed.
Blow him away. I'm a big proponent of just blow him away.
No, I don't think that it was a live gun.
Okay, so here's my answer. If you ask the directors or the writers, they're now going to tell you yes.
Yeah.
Because she never fired. And if they made her fire, it would have been no. So, because all I thought when he took the handcuffs off was, idiot, you had her so jumpy, she could have shot you at that moment. I would have shot you at that moment.
That's what built the suspense. And, you know, he's like, can you lower that? You know, and that's what made it funny. Because, like, oh, my gosh, she almost shot him, you know.
Right. No, but I thought of it as, oh, my gosh, I would have shot him. The moment his hands flipped over and I saw the cuffs open, he'd be on the floor.
But like you said, his demeanor... Even before he took off the cuffs, he was like, all right. That was an instant demeanor change. And he was like talking to someone, all right. She's not going to, you know, and then he takes the cuffs off. So.
Yeah.
There was a few seconds of
her point of view now. Hold on. Her point of view. Instead of watching as the viewer's point of view, watch from her point of view how this goes. Two guys drag him in here, show his face. He spends the next 6 minutes attempting you in every way possible to get your guard down and let him do his job. He then goes for the door, ignoring you. You have a gun to him. Then, randomly, he talks to some random other voice that you don't know, right? And says, oh yeah, we're good. This was just a test. You just spent 5 minutes lying to me. Bang! Bang!
Yep. Cry wolf.
I don't trust you. You know, so I think they didn't want to write it this way, but if they just had the two guys that brought him in come back in, that fixes that problem, but they didn't.
Hmm.
But I would have shot him. I would have probably shot him with stun, but I would have shot him.
You're right, because he is. He's trying every way under the sun to try and get her, and so now this is...
And she realizes it. Like, yeah. She's not biting on any of them.
Right.
Now, all right, well, all those ways of pushing you into doing it didn't work. I'm just going to act like this was fake.
Yeah, yeah. That's, from her perspective, you're right. Can I have one little moment that I thought was funny and it brought out my teacher, Miss Nelson? So Cadet Sidhu, she's like, sit down and be quiet. And then he starts talking. That's not silent, or whatever she said. Sit down and be silent. And he starts, that's not silent. Oh my gosh. How many times have I said that? It just made my teacher heart be happy. And I was like, see, you understand the pressures and the frustration that I have with these kids. These kids. And that's, I was thinking the same thing too. It's like, listen, this is what I want you to do. Will you just do this? But Miss Nelson, and then they come up with every excuse on why they didn't do their homework or why whatever.
My dog ate it.
It's every excuse to try and coerce me into giving them a passing grade, right? This is classic end of the quarter, end of the semester scenario in my classroom where the students are, but Miss Nelson, I was sick, but Miss Nelson, I was da-da-da.
And Miss Nelson, like, I died. I came back to life just to make it to class today.
Yeah. Just sit down and be quiet. Nope, don't talk. That's not quiet. Yes.
Okay. Just so you know, that never stops. I teach 18 to 45-year-olds, and I still have to do that.
Yeah.
And what's worse about them is they think they're equals.
Oh, yeah.
You're not. Just because we're the same age doesn't make you my equal. I have 12 years experience here. You have zero.
Yep.
But, I still deal with that. I just dealt with it yesterday heavily. My Wednesday class is very talkative. They're good kids, mostly, but they're very talkative. And they're also great at... Although I will say this, my dog did once eat my kid's homework, so he wasn't lying when he said it, and we went in with the remnants of said homework.
I have had that brought to me as well.
There wasn't much of it left, but...
But when I taught in Utah my first 5 years, it was sort of out in rural, and the goat literally ate the homework. Which is way more believable than a dog.
Right.
No, my goats will eat paper like that.
Anything. So. They'll eat anything.
Yeah.
You know who eats homeworks? It did it to me once. Rabbits.
Oh, yes.
Rabbits
yes.
eat everything. We had a rabbit almost fry itself on telephone wires in my house because the cage was too close and it like pulled the telephone. You know how they run the cables along the baseboards?
Yeah.
Pulled it into the cage and started biting on it. Now, as an electrician, I know this. I didn't as a kid. A telephone is 18 volts. The dial tone, when you hear the, which half our listeners are old enough to know what a dial tone sounds like. But that's only like 18 volts. But the moment it rings, that's 110 volts. So it's like a regular outlet.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, the bunny had it in his mouth and it rang.
Oh.
Well, he didn't die. He was fine for years, but don't eat my telephone wire. Dummy. But they'll eat everything. Anything that gets near their mouth, they eat.
Yeah.
I didn't know that about bunnies till then. So, yeah. I did have a doggy. That doggy's not with us anymore, but he ate homework once.
Yeah.
And, but we did send it in. We didn't just tell my son to tell the teacher that. So, and he had the rest of his homework done. It was just the one part.
That's funny.
But, yeah, so, I don't know. Like I said from the beginning, so I didn't have any, like, major dislikes of the episode either.
Yeah, I think we sort of picked at him throughout.
Yeah, nothing that was like, oh my, I can't believe this happened. I mean, it was just... things I'd do differently, but that's it.
Oh, one little thing that I didn't really care for was, again, the interaction between Spock and Number One. Because it was like, okay, so Number One, this was her idea. And then Spock, what did he say? Oh, we know that she shows no mercy or whatever.
Yeah, we've come to expect no mercy from Number One.
And then they exchange this little look. And I'm like... Okay, first of all, yes, we know that you had a little thing at Q&A.
That's what it was.
But the sentence didn't even justify them having a look.
Well, of course it did, because that's who she portrays to the crew, but he knows differently.
Okay, I missed that. Okay, then no, I like it now.
I'm glad I fixed that for you. If we didn't get Q&A this set of short treks, I bet you that look doesn't happen. But because it just happened, and we remember it happening, that look was just like the look when he walked in the bridge and she acted like she didn't know his name. Except this one made a heck of a lot more sense because everyone would have known you were stuck in an elevator with him for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But she puts off to the crew, which now makes me think that the reason why she didn't remember his name last time was just because she puts to the crew that she doesn't care about underlings and
right, yeah, you know what I mean?
It's more of a cold-hearted thing than a I don't know him because I haven't met him thing. It's more of a he's a nobody,
yeah,
and that's kind of what they're portraying her out to, how she portrays herself to the crew, even though we and Spock know differently now.
Okay, fixed. I like it.
I'm glad I could fix that.
Yeah. Well, and then you just fixed your thing about Q&A, so. That one little thing.
Right. That was annoying when that happened. But now, yes.
Yeah.
It's not that she didn't know his name because, and it's not that nobody knew that they were together. It's that she didn't care enough to learn his name even though they were stuck together.
It's a twofer.
Yep.
Two for one fix.
So, there's that. I still don't like the triple nonsense.
Okay. We're not going there.
No, I did. It was still terrible. They didn't fix it yet.
Okay. So Ask Not. Yep. It's an episode. It's a short trek and it's short.
Yeah, that's about the best you can say about it.
The end.
It's an episode. It was short. It fits the qualifications. It wasn't the worst one of the season, but it wasn't great.
Yeah, I don't know if you listened to the music. I did listen to the music. I thought it was very beautiful. And I remembered to write down the person's name, Andrea Datzman. Again, under Jeff Russo's theme. I don't know her, and I didn't look her up, but I thought it was worth mentioning. And then also, listeners, not sure if you are aware, on the app, under the like extras, there's a little 2-minute blurb with Anson Mount.
Oh, almost as long as the episode.
It's just him. It was as long. And it's him describing what's happening in the episode. Like literally scene by scene. It was pretty funny. And yeah, 2 minutes, that was the episode. So, but if you like to see Anson Mount and listen to his voice and have him explain it to you again, that is there. I did watch it and it was good because I like to look at Anson Mount. We'll just leave it at that.
I don't have the same affinity. Okay. I'm not an extras guy. Like, I don't watch the extras on DVDs. I don't buy when a new special edition DVD with so-and-so's commentary. I don't care. Like, that's not my thing. So yeah.
I was just letting the listeners.
No, there's plenty of people who love that stuff.
Yeah.
Most people, especially Star Trek people, love
the extras.
Extras. And not just in Star Trek. They'll buy every version. If they love a movie, they have 15. They have all 15 versions of Star Wars at this point because it has so many different things in each version.
Right.
I'm not that guy. So I didn't watch it.
Okay. That's all I got.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's all I got too. I'm even amazed we went this long. So, it's been fun talking about Ask Not today, but this isn't the only thing we've been discussing here on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Literary Treks.
I knew from the beginning it was going to be a very large and complicated undertaking. I was asked by the editor and the licensor to come up with a storyline for Picard that would deal with the fallout of what I unleashed in my novel Section 31 Control, in which Section 31's crimes, and in fact its very existence, are publicly exposed to the Federation at large as well as its interstellar neighbors.
Earl Grey.
Troy looks down at her empty stomach.
Let me do this part. I'm going to act it.
Okay. Troy looks down at her empty stomach and frowns telepathically.
Oh, I wish.
Listeners, you couldn't see it, but I did that.
Oh, okay.
LaForge. Computer, locate a big thing of chips.
To the journey!
What about the basics planet?
That planet's not bad. There's a lot of wide open spaces. You just have to avoid going in the caves.
Yeah. I mean, anthropologically speaking.
No spelunking on that planet. You can spelunk on the Borg Unicomplex, but you can't spelunk on that planet.
No.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
That he's...
He was taking the new body out for a ride?
Yeah, that was great.
I mean, it was a great line. It just doesn't really fit what really happened. Like, he wasn't out there dating other people, you know? Like,
well, he was trying to figure out who this new Culber was, you know?
No, I know, but
it was like funny, it was lighthearted.
It just doesn't fit what he actually did.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it will come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the edge that will come right to me. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Pat, where can people find you when you're not coercing your children to do your menial labor?
Nowhere.
I know.
Even if they find me, I'm doing that. Some way, shape, or form. But
that's
there are
why
great
you
many...
have kids, right?
yes, I do. I have kids here. I have kids at work. I have kids everywhere. Someone's doing the labor and I'm not. So, but while I'm doing that, there are a great many places you can find me, actually. I do pop up in the Babel Conference. It's like the only Facebook page I check anymore. I'm so done with Facebook. You can also find me on Twitter at MagicDrop5. I don't really post there much, but if you send me a message there, I will respond to you. You can find me with my good friend Chris Tribuzio, with sometimes guest star hosting Brendan Shamatala for Mickey's Marvels, where we're currently covering The Mandalorian as it airs. You can also find me on Twitch at MagicDrop5. Oh, on Twitter, you can find me at MagicDrop5, no spaces. The 5 is the number. Same deal with Twitch. I'll either be playing World of Warcraft or Diablo 3 or Age of Empires, or soon when World Diablo 4 comes out, I'll be playing that. And I think I've covered all the places you can find me now. So, Amy, where can people find you when you're not telling your students to sit down and be silent?
Oh, that is all the time. And they just don't listen to me. Well, you can find me. Where am I? Here on the network. I co-host Earl Grey with Justin Ozer and Joe Keegan. That is about Star Trek The Next Generation, which is why I talked about coming of age, because that's, you know, next gen. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, and you can find me, of course, on the Babel Conference.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/TrekFM. That's patreon.com/TrekFM to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credit, and more. Available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/TrekFM.
We would like to thank our cadets, who we will not coerce or put through any tests.
I will.
We are just grateful that they are our listeners and our associate producers. They are Norman Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Puleo, Lisa Slack, Shoab Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Mallett, Chris Tribuzio, and Brian Malosh. Thank you for supporting Trek FM, and especially The Edge.
I put Chris through trials and tribulations every other week on Mickey's Marvels.
He deserves it, though.
He does.
Hashtag still listening.
We'll find out. Thank you for listening, and join us next time to see what's happening on the edge of Federation Space.